Hey, what's up, everyone? This is WDET Sam Bobian, and we are back here for another Sam's Jams Live on WDET. And this week, I have my very special guest, good friend, John Dixon. How you doing, John?
I'm wonderful. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing real good. So, me and John have known each other for a long time.
About 20 years or so, I think.
20 years.
Do the math. Yeah.
20 years goes by quick, doesn't it?
Very, very much so.
So, for those that don't know, John is an incredible musician from right here in Detroit, piano player, but he's also an incredible electronic producer, works a lot with Underground Resistance. He has his own label called Forever Forward. He's been pretty prolific over the last handful of years, lots of EPs, lots of music coming out. So today I want to talk about the stuff you've been working on, kind of share your process, talk about your history, share who you are with our listeners.
Sure.
So, you know, you're born here in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You went to DSA for high school.
Yes.
And you, shortly after that, you met Marcus Belgrave.
Yep. So my 11th grade year, which was my first year after DSA, my one of my other band directors, Mr. Nashif, told us about a summer institute that was taking place through the DSO, and they had a two-week jazz camp. And Marcus Belgrave was the instructor, and I didn't know who Marcus Belgrave was at the time. But I met a lot of other great musicians that summer. I met Darrell Campbell, I met Chris Johnson, Marion Felder, who plays drums for Michael Bublé, a lot of other great guys. And so that summer, the first week of the two weeks, I remember when it came time for lunch, we had an hour lunch break, and Marcus would sit down at the piano with me because I had no idea how to read chord changes. It was like the most foreign thing to me ever. And so he took about 30 minutes Monday through Friday, you know, to sit down, show me various things, how to read them, what all the numbers and plus minus symbols meant, how to play them. And that second week, I was happy that I could enjoy my full hour of lunch because I didn't need to sit down with him anymore. But I remember going back to high school, my 12th grade year, and being in jazz band. Everybody's like, whoa, like, you've been faking it all this time. You really knew how to play? I'm like, no, I really didn't. I got a lot of help.
Yeah, Marcus, you know, for those that don't know, one of the most incredible trump players of all time.
Yes.
Wynton Marsalis, who is considered like, you know, the top trumpet player jazz artist of today, considers Marcus one of the best trumpet players to ever exist.
Wow.
And Marcus played with everyone from Ray Charles to Carl Craig to yep. everyone. He mm-hmm. was, his musical palette was very broad, and he was also a huge educator. He really inspired a few generations of musicians here in the city
mm-hmm.
That have gone on to do incredible things. And so yep. Marcus, huge educator, and mm-hmm. he had a huge impact on you.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get When I knew you, like you're saying, you were a jazz musician.
Yep.
You know, we
yep.
went to school, we were playing jazz together. I remember not long after we graduated, I started seeing you playing with these like techno shows. I was going to that movement, doing different things. And I was like, John's up there playing with these guys? Like, that's crazy. Because I guess as a jazz musician, jazz music is always music that's always changing, mm-hmm. evolving. You never play the same song twice or something about being a jazz musician, right? Mm-hmm. And then electronic music is kind of, is different than that.
Yep.
And it embraces that difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, what was it like being someone who played in maybe improvisational music into a form of music that was, you know, pretty repetitive, mm-hmm. loop-based music? You know, what drew you to that?
It's actually pretty similar now that I look back and think about it. As you know, like, everybody in Detroit plays some sort of instrument, you know. So when I first met the UR guys, you know, Mike Banks used to play guitar with George Clinton, and he also plays keyboards. And the band that I started with, which was Galaxy to Galaxy, it was three keyboards, a bass player, Deshaun on sax, electronic drummer, and the DJ who also played keyboards. So it's like, while we're playing this music, which is original and loops, but there's these live elements in there, whether it's the strings, whether it's the chords, or the bass line was played by hand. So it was a different approach. And so it reminded me of electronic music approached by a musician and someone who understands or understood what could work for the dance floor, but with a musician's approach. Not saying you need to have that musician's approach, but if you were to put it into context, like, imagine having this huge toolbox of musical theory that you don't necessarily need to make this music. But when you have the music, whatever that is, to work for the dance floor, maybe you'll crack this toolbox open and say, okay, what do I want to use from this toolbox to throw in? Maybe it's a modulation, maybe it might be a different chord change for the bridge or key change for the bridge. These different tools so that it's not just the same melodic or harmonic structure from start to finish. So being able to meet Mike and all the other guys and hear their approaches to some of the songs and things that they were working on, that also inspired me in terms of my approach and how I wanted to approach making this style of music myself.
So one of the first tracks that I could find online that was credited to you was from a Timeline album. It was a Greystone Ballroom EP.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
Yep. So the main track, The Ghost of Greystone, me and Mike recorded in the studio in one take. It was a very cold winter's night. And to this day, like, I still make my best music in the winter. I don't know what it is about it, but it was really cold. And we would always work at night. That's when he was always free. You know, my studio was on the other side of the building in Submerge. And so, you know, Mike did the drums. And like, I was just, this was like the first, you know, like the first thing that I ever played on that actually got pressed. And it was really exciting to be able to hear myself back. I thought it was the coolest thing ever to hold a record and say, wow, like I'm on this playing. It was very unique.
Yeah. And I look at this album, I look at the track titles. It seems to be a theme for this album. What's the theme for this album?
The theme is just what, like, Detroit's jazz scene, you know, the Paradise Valley, the Greystone Ballroom, Lottie the Body. I think there's a track on there called Lottie the Body, who was a famous dancer, not a stripper, but she would dance at these various jazz clubs. Save the Bluebird, that was another historic jazz club in the city that I think back then they were talking about tearing it down. I'm probably sure it's torn down now. I'm not sure about the Greystone Ballroom, but these are all places that I was too young to remember. But, you know, my parents' generation, you know, who are the same age as Mike, you know, they remember these places. And this is where they went, and they would go to hear their version of dance music, which was jazz.
That was the song Ghosts of Greystone by the group Timeline of Underground Resistance. And right now I'm in the studio with John Dixon, who played on that track and is part of Underground Resistance. So this group is Timeline.
Yes.
There's also Galaxy to Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between Timeline and Galaxy to Galaxy?
Yep, so Galaxy to Galaxy is seven-piece band, I think, three keyboards. Myself, Mike Banks, Esteban Adame, William Pope on bass, Deshaun Jones on sax, Raphael Merriweathers, who does percussion, and then DJ Scourge is the DJ, and he also plays keys. When Timeline is myself on keys, Mike Banks on keys, Mark Flash as the DJ and percussionist, and Deshaun Jones on sax.
And how did you meet Mike Banks?
So I met Mike, I was at Shane Park doing a sound check, getting ready to play with somebody, and I got a call from Deshaun about an international gig at the Montreux Jazz Fest. And this wasn't my first call from Deshaun about an international gig. So I'm like, yeah, have them call me, right? And so a couple days later, I get a call from this guy, and I used the clean version. He was like, if you wanna get paid, travel the world, come by the building Monday at 3 p.m. If not, get the blank on. are you down? I'm like, yeah. So he gave me the address. I went by, rang the doorbell. He opened the door, didn't say anything. He took me up to the second floor, set me down at a keyboard, said, play something. I started playing. 20 seconds later or so, he's like, all right, cool. Go downstairs, talk to the manager about getting your passport. We start rehearsal tomorrow. We leave for Switzerland in 2 weeks. And that was it.
And that was Mike Banks.
And that was Mike Banks, yep. And then while it all happened so fast and I had no idea who these guys were, the day after we played the Montreux Jazz Fest, I remember me and Deshaun were walking around. And we walked into a cafe and we heard the song High Tech Jazz on the radio. And I guess they were talking about our show the previous night. And we were like, oh, my God, that's us. And one of the girls said, oh, which one of you is Mad Mike? And I was like, wait a minute. I thought Mike never been to Switzerland. I'm like, okay, who is Underground Resistance? Who is Mike? Who is Galaxy to Galaxy? Because there's something that's not clicking here. And so that's when I started doing a lot of research. And which was what was great about that time was it wasn't as much available on YouTube as it is now. So like a lot of that research was me asking Mike questions.
So what is Underground Resistance?
Underground Resistance, I think, is... it can be described in a number of ways. I guess the best way to put it, it was one of the first record labels, independent record labels, to do music their way, which was, you know, we care more about the music than what we look like. So they decided how many records they put out, how many EPs they put out, what the titles were going to be, what the artwork was going to be. And you, the listener, or you, the booking agent, had no control over what the output was. You couldn't be told what the content should be. You couldn't be told how long it should be, how often you should make a record. It was really just about pushing, I think, pushing this music, and I think pushing themselves further and just seeing how deep they could go, as well as having these various messages within the music, whether it's political or African-American history. It was a way to write these messages within the music and have it be where, like, if you could crack the code, as Mike would say, then good for you. If not, that's fine as well. But it showed me, and I think a lot of others, like, it paved the way to just show that you don't necessarily, or not necessarily, but in general, you don't have to have a record deal to make your own records how you want to make them. And you can release them when and how you want and not be controlled with or by a major label. You know, the only difference is there's no upfront payment, you know. But I think here in Detroit, everybody cares more so about the art that they're making, or at least that's the way it should be. And I tell that to my students all the time. Like, if you're here to make money or you're trying to make money, you're in the wrong business, and definitely in the wrong city. Like, we're here and we care more about the art and not the money. So be here to contribute to the scene and not to take from it or take advantage of it. So I think that's one of the great things that UR stands for, is they stand for 100% the music.
And he was, if you watch early interviews with Mad Mike, he's had that approach for a long time.
Yep.
Like, before people were even moving here to Detroit, you know, I think after they, you know, kind of created this genre of music, like, people from all the world, like you said, Switzerland, different places, started getting a taste of it, and they would come here and, he would do these interviews with masks on.
Yep.
He wanted to be he didn't want, I guess, I thought about it. He didn't want to be about him.
Right.
He wanted to be about what they were doing. He didn't want to be the face on it. He wanted it to be it.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, they were protective over what they were doing. They were serious about it. And that whole mysteriousness is kind of carried into a lot of parts of Detroit electronic music. Moody Man, all those people are all pretty mysterious, and that's part of it.
Exactly.
And as a consumer, it makes you want more.
Right.
Right. You want to find it. You have to look for it. You have to experience it. It's not easily accessible.
Right.
So
it was always his hope and dream to have Submerged act as a Motown, where you had this building full of musicians, producers, DJs. But he always told us, like, you know, you can't stay on UR forever. Eventually, you got to go out and start your own label, especially if you're making music to the point where you can support and have a successful label. And I look at my label as being successful only because, whether it's one EP or two EPs a year, it's consistent. And I look at that more important than output. You know, I've always been a quality over quantity guy.
Yeah, and so you started your label Forever Forward.
Mm-hmm.
What's the concept behind the label? What's your feeling about it?
Literally, like in the name, Forever Forward. Like, as soon as I finish an EP, at least in the studio, I'm on moving forward. I'm on the next track, whatever that is, whether it's for my label, whether it's for someone else. So, like, as soon as I finish that record, like I'm thinking about whatever is coming after that. So, for example, with the Fly Free EP, I didn't originally intend to put it out. It was something that I kind of made for Al Ester. Like, I was overseas, and I thought about that opening Anita Baker line, and I was like, oh, man, like it would be cool to take that and turn it into a track.
Yeah, so this song, like you said, has a sample in it,
mm-hmm.
Anita Baker, which is, I don't think, as far as I know, I can't recognize any other samples in your music.
Good.
Yeah, okay, good.
They're in there.
Okay. Yeah, this is a great track, and I feel
Thank you.
This was kind of like a lot of people's introduction to the John Dixon sound.
I think so.
Because I feel like this song kind of really picked up. I heard this on the BBC,
mm-hmm.
on Giles Peterson and, mm-hmm. and Benji B. I would hear it on Red Bull Radio a lot.
Wow.
And I remember I was hearing it. And I was like, I knew it was John. I knew this was you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I know that sample from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was like, it took me a minute. I'm like, is that Michael Jackson? No, it's mm-hmm. Anita Baker. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a good like example of like your sound.
Thank you. I'm glad I have a sound.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I did. But I mean, again, like in my early UR days, and like everybody, every now and then they would ask me in interviews, they was like, so what did Mike teach you? And I was like, one of the biggest things he taught me was not how to make this music. That was something that I had to figure out myself. And a lot of that came with figuring out who I was as a person, who I was as a musician, you know, who I was as an instructor. And now it translates to who I am as a father, who I am as a future music therapist. It's like, this is what makes, I think, everybody, every artist in Detroit themselves. It's like, you have to know and understand who you are as a person first, and then that easily translates into the music or to whatever art you're creating.
This is WDET's Sam Bobian, and you are listening to Sam's Jams. And this week, my guest is the one and only John Dixon. John is an amazing producer and musician from right here in Detroit. He's been making some amazing waves in the electronic music scene over the years, working with Underground Resistance and his own label Forever Forward, amongst many other things. And John is an amazing musician. He can play many styles of music. So, John, what's your approach to making a track? Do you have, like, I'm sure you probably don't have a formula, but I'm sure there's a path you generally take.
Whenever I have an idea, I go and I record that idea. And I record as many other ideas that I'm hearing in the moment, but as soon as I stop hearing ideas or things, I stop everything. And then I save it. And then I come back to whatever that initial idea is after I can't remember what I recorded. It might be a day or two, it might be a week or two. I think you might even be able to agree, Sam, as people with musical knowledge, we can always second guess, and there's always a better edit we can do. There's always a little bit more music that we can add in here. We can go back and, oh, I can make this better, I can fix that. And so with the minor invention, it's like, no, like, if you're satisfied with it, if you think it sounds fine, great, save, move on. Like, don't overthink it, just do it and put it out. And so that's a lot of, it was tough with a lot of them because I was like, come on, I want to go back and do this, or this might not work. It's like, so what, who cares, do it.
The things that happen in those moments you can't recreate sometimes.
Yeah.
So there's magic in those moments.
It is. So that's that approach. It's just do it, record it, put it out.
Yeah. So in 2018, you released a tribute to Marcus Belgrave.
Yes.
Right? So how do I say the name of that project?
Erudition.
Erudition. What does that mean?
If I remember correct, it's a fancy word for wisdom.
So on this project, listening to it, you took excerpts from conversations you had from Marcus, it sounds like, and some of his playing. Yeah. It's a really beautiful project, and especially for myself, you know, I'm a trumpet player. Growing up in Detroit, I spent some time with Marcus. It's great hearing his voice.
Yes.
And telling those stories. So, what can you tell me about that project?
Yeah, it was very special. I had Marcus come down and meet me at the school I teach at, which is the community music school down on Woodward. And I had my sampler, my Roland sampler, and he had his trumpet. And the interview was about a 30-minute interview. And I just asked him a couple of different questions. I recorded everything. And I told him to take out his horn, and I said, I'm going to record you two times. First in the key of D minor, and second in the key of B minor. And there was no music at the time. He just played, and whenever he played, I recorded, and that was it. So I made everything fit within the music. The hard part was taking the interview, and maybe one day I'll release it. You know, I talked with his son and with Joan and see, but like, it was maybe, I think it was, 20, 30 minute interview of him just answering questions, you know, from back from, like, you know, what was the jazz scene like in Detroit when you first moved here? And, you know, all the way up to, you know, where do you see music moving forward? You know, what's some of the things you love about Detroit? You know, it was just really great conversation. And I was in Barcelona on touring with Carl Craig, telling me all the different stories that he's had with Marcus. There's a picture I found on Google of Marcus at Movement on stage with Carl. This is back when Carl had an afro, so you could kind of imagine what year that was. But I was like, and I remember one time, this was in like early, maybe 2011, like this was one of my first or second shows I just did with Carl. And I went over Marcus's house and I told him I just got back, you know, playing with Carl Craig, not even thinking he would know who he is. Like, oh yeah, I know Carl. I'm thinking, what? My God. But I remember him telling me, like, man, you know, stick with Carl, stick with that music, because that music is the future. Mm. And he said that to me, you know, almost 11, 12 years or so ago. And so I'm really glad that I was able to release that project just for the sake of getting the music out. And for those who weren't familiar with Marcus, to be able to get familiar with Marcus, as well as his students, you know, Chris Johnson, who played trumpet on that, as well as Deshaun Jones and myself.
Yeah, and it's like playing with Carl, too. You've got to play amazing places like Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that like playing Carnegie Hall, Carl Craig?
Special. It was another special moment. I mean, it was another testament to what's possible and what you can do when you believe in yourself, and more importantly, when you believe in your music. I mean, you know, like, here we are, all Detroiters on this illustrious stage in New York playing all original music, but playing it in a non-classical way, yet in a very similar symphonic way. You know, you have four keyboard players with the same keyboards, and then you have a guy on grand piano, and then you have Carl also with the synthesizer. And then it reminded me of that moment when I was 15 again, when my dad said, "You need to learn how to read." I'm thinking, well, why? Like, the Carnegie Hall gig, there's improvisation, but only at the end of the show. It's like, you can be the best player, but if you can't read, you wouldn't be able to get, like, you wouldn't have gotten called for that gig. So, you know, special shout out to Kelvin Scholar, another Detroiter who had to not only think who were great musicians, but who do I know that knows how to read music as well as, you know, understand what it is we're trying to bring about with the concept of that approach.
All right, so I want to hear a song here. Mm-hmm. I want to take a listen to, this is a song called Wise Words.
Yes.
And this is off your tribute to Marcus Belgrave. The next track I want to talk about from 2018 came out the same year as the Marcus Belgrave tribute, mm-hmm. Your Sampa EP,
uh-huh.
Which is probably one of my favorite projects that you put out.
Thank you.
So what can you tell me about the Sampa EP in this track?
Yep, so Sampa is a nickname for Sao Paulo, which is a city in Brazil, also in the state of Sao Paulo. And I remember visiting there in 2007 for the first time. And then it was just something about the city that I couldn't really quite put my finger on. So I ended up going back for 10 days in 2010. And I remember meeting a lot of DJs, a lot of musicians, a lot of singers. And it reminded me so much of Detroit. You know, here's this city that, you know, wasn't the most appealing to some people visually, but then it was to the people who live there. Like, they're very proud of their city, very proud of their culture. And the level of musicianship, it reminded me that of people here. And so I just, like, fell in love with the city, with all the different people that I met. And so the title track, which is Paulista Avenue, that's like their version of Woodward Avenue. That's the main street that runs up the city. And, like, if you ever look at pictures of Sao Paulo, it's just like a jungle of buildings. And so I tried, that was like the first and only track that I've ever made with no music, and I tried to recreate like what this city looks like visually. And so this track, which is called Our Love Goes Over features a singer by the name of Kennedy Echoes. She's from here in Detroit. And it's funny, she her senior year in high school, she interviewed me, and I was just showing her how one of my pieces of equipment worked. And I told her to just sing something in the mic, and this was what she sung. And then I ended up going back to it a couple years later, and then here's the track.
If you're just tuning in, this is WDET's Sam Bobian, and you're listening to Sam's Jams Live on Culture Shift. And my guest on this episode is John Dixon, the amazing producer, musician from right here in Detroit. And like I said, that mixes pretty well into the 7 Mile remix, the song Want It, which came out shortly after that, which is a collaborative project. And it's hard not to think of Amp Fiddler and not think about 7 Mile.
Yes,
exactly. He's right there.
Exactly. Which, hence the name, I was like, oh, I know what to call this one. I'm from the 6 Mile area, and then Amp is from the 7 Mile area, so...
In 2020, you put out the Times of Change EP. What can you tell us about Times of Change?
So, Times of Change, the title comes from one of my favorite quotes from Eric Hoffer, which is, in times of change, learners inherit the earth, while the learned find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with the world that no longer exists. And so, when I started this track, I had this idea to, like, theoretically... make a song that technically wouldn't work on the dance floor, but make it work on the dance floor. And so, like, I thought about these chords and these rhythms and 7/8. And so If you listen to how the chords fall, like when the first chord stabs come in, they're in groups of seven instead of groups of fours or groups of eight. So it's the seven bar pattern of chord structures, but over a 4/4 drum pattern. And I also felt like, you know, I wanted to kind of change times, music related in terms of the time signature, but also I felt like the average producer is getting lazier because of the technology. Like, you don't have to know much about music to make music. And so I said, well, if I could make a statement in music saying that this is what you could do if you were to create something with a little bit of musical knowledge that your computer software wouldn't be able to recognize, what would that sound like? And this would be it. You know, like you go on Beatport and they tell you what key songs are in. I forget what key it said this song is in, but it's like, no, it's not really in the key. The key changes a lot. So you kind of have to follow it and go along with it, you know, if you've got the ear to be able to do so.
When I listen to these songs, as the time goes by, as your production over the years develops, mm-hmm. I'm hearing, as a piano player, mm-hmm. different ways that you're trying to find the use of the keyboards in the music.
Yes.
And I hear that a lot in these tunes. I hear that a lot, your use of your development as a keyboard player
in this
genre of music.
Yep. As someone that's been playing for 30 years, and I think, like, always lately, like, my latest inspiration has been chefs. If you're a chef that's been cooking for over 30 years, you get bored with the same recipes and the same approaches. So how do you take the same ingredients that's been available to us, you know, for the past 100 years or so, but how do you make something different and something new from it? Or how do you recreate your own style or approach to making a dish? And so, like, I always get these moments where I'll be in the studio maybe and I'll just stop everything and I'm like, you know, you did that already. Turn everything off and then come back a couple of days later. Or how can you make this different? Or I'll sit down before I do anything and just say, what can you make that you haven't made already? And that reminded me of the saying that, you know, when I first started letting Mike Banks hear these tracks that I was making, his brutal, harsh, but honest feedback was, I heard that before. And that's all he would say. I was standing there, he was standing there, and I'm like, okay. I'll go back and... But I was making what I thought he wanted to hear, what I thought was what dance music should sound like. And he wasn't looking for the stuff that he had heard. And so what that made me realize was it made me be able to take honest feedback. And, you know, now I'm at the point where, and I heard I'll call him a legend. I heard a legend say in the city, once you put music out, it's no longer yours anymore. So if you care about people's feedback or criticism, then you probably shouldn't be putting out music if it's gonna affect you in some kind of way. It's like, it's just like art. Like, a lot of people might not like, you know, the Mona Lisa. Who cares? It's out. The artist put it out, and here it is on the wall in the Louvre, right? So you don't have to like it, but if your job is to paint as the artist, paint. And then if you appreciate it, if you love it, if that's what you saw or what you envisioned, go for it. And so it's the same with my music. I'm not making it for people to like it. I'm making it because I've got to get these ideas out of my head and not go crazy if I don't. And so I just so happen to release them every now and then.
The next track's from your Lineage EP. Mm-hmm. It's called Spider's Pocket.
Yes.
And if you're a musician from Detroit, you know who Spider is.
You know who Spider is.
Who is Spider? Right.
Spider Webb is a notorious drummer from Motown. Played on hundreds of records, I'm sure. And I'm not the best when it comes to song titles. I've gotten better. And so, like, I've got this drum sample in there, and I'm like, what can I name this about? A drummer or something dealing with drummers. And I was like, oh, Spider. And I was like, hey, Spider's last name is Webb. I was gonna call it Spider's Webb, but I said, no, let me name it something a little bit, you know, in my mic banks. Let me let some people do some research. I said, let's call it Spider's Pocket. So if you know what a pocket is, you know, it's not what's on your pants, but it's a drummer or any rhythm section instrument or even horns, keeping that same consistent melodic or rhythmic motif, whatever that is, and sticking with it. And so decided to call this one Spider's Pocket.
Spider's Pocket off the Lineage EP from 2021. So the track I want to listen to next from the new Tomorrow EP, which is called 90 on the Lodge.
Oh yeah.
And Detroiters out there can definitely know about going 90 on the Lodge.
Yes.
What can you tell me about this track?
I remember my first time doing 90, 95 on the Lodge. And those of you who've done that, it's a feeling that, and you can picture it in your mind from how the lodge walls curve up, and you hope that a police officer doesn't come down getting onto the freeway. But you're easy, I think, depending on the time of day. I don't do it anymore, but it was easy to kind of swerve in between three lanes going that speed, you know.
It's a pretty fun sounding track. A lot of your tracks are, you know, pretty deep, pretty rhythmic, complex, and this is just like a fun song.
Yep, that's what I wanted. Yeah,
which driving down the lodge going 90 is pretty fun.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you're out there right now listening, I hope you're not doing that right
no,
now.
No, please don't.
We'll be right back.
So I'm seeing a lot of themes on these songs. Mm-hmm. This next one I want to talk about is Detroit Get Down EP, mm-hmm. How We Get Down in Detroit.
Yep.
So a lot of these songs are pretty Detroit focused.
Yes.
Obviously a big influence on the music, a big influence on yourself. Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about the Detroit Get Down EP and specifically the song How We Get Down in Detroit?
This track, it reminds me of like so many things, like how we do Memorial Day in Detroit, how we do July 4th, or how we do Labor Day in Detroit, which is with, you know, the Jazz Fest, how we do Belle Isle, or how we do picnics, which back then, you know, you go to Belle Isle for a picnic, how we do going to hang out on a Friday night, whatever that might look like, you know, these different things, like how we roller skate, you know, this is how we dance, whether it's ballrooming or at a different club, just all the things that you have to come here or be from here to experience and know that what we do here is different from how everybody else does it in the world. So that was kind of the inspiration behind that track.
Well, let's do it. This is How We Get Down in Detroit. So you brought this record in for me today, mm-hmm. Vocal Sessions Volume 1. Mm-hmm. This is a track that I want to listen to on here. It's called Feel Your Touch. Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about this song?
Detroit has so many artists, as you know, that might not ever get any sort of attention. Not that I get a lot, but I'm like, if there's anything I could do, I want to be able to just spotlight more artists and kind of bring them to the forefront, and hopefully people end up going on Bandcamp or Spotify or whatever, Googling these people, seeing who they are, where they can get their music. And that's also like one of the other things behind my label, is just, you know, bringing in other instrumentalists or vocalists or artists in general, even if it's visual, and just anybody that's doing anything with 100% pure passion and doing it for love. How do I try to move what they're doing forward?
Last track I want to hear today is off your most recent release, mm-hmm. Musicality EP. Mm-hmm. This is a song that features one of my favorite drummers from Detroit.
Yeah.
The song is called The Room 131 Live Edit. So there's a live edit, there's a studio edit.
Yep.
So what can you tell us about this track and who you did the song with?
Sure. So Room 131 is a group that I have with myself and drummer Marquise Johnson. I met Marquise in the year 2000 at DSA in the band room. And the band room just so happened to be 131. And so I sent Quis the track. I said, Quis, here's the track. Record yourself. And one take, playing live. But in the background, he recorded stems individually of him playing all the studio parts. So there it's hidden deep in the background. But when he sent it over to me, he was like, it's not really mixed that well. It's not really. And I was like, me with my mind reinvention approach, I'm like, so what? Let's just take it. Let's see how it does. And like, this is probably the best selling track off the EP. So that means that very soon there's going to be a Room 131 EP with Marquise and myself based off of that response. So.
So, John, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure. Always good to be here at WDET.
Incredible music, incredible sound, representing the city.
Thank you.
The whole history in it. I really hope everyone enjoyed the music today. This is Sam Jams Live on Culture Shift.